So I think we have to prepare students for understanding that that might be an environment that they will be exposed to. And someone may not say to them, you have to learn this. You have to take the initiative yourself to realize that this new product, let's say I need to talk about, or this new process is what I have to learn about. What are the resources available for me online to learn about that? So that's, I think, one big difference in the more traditional work situation we've seen.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome back to the second episode with our guest, Peggy Mackey. Peggy, glad to have you back.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And I'm also happy most of the time to be with my co-host, Tiffany Snyder.
Lies.
Actually, all the time. All the time.
Hi, everyone.
Let's get back into the questions.
We've talked about identifying or where to go to identify technologies to use in the classroom. One thing I'm curious about is, once you are implementing technologies into the online teaching experience, how do you really invest in creating the most beneficial technology and learning experience for students in the classroom?
That's just a perfect question, because it's one of the first things you need to think about in the decision to use a piece of technology, a digital option, a courseware, a module, is how students are going to be able to use it. So I take a student-centered approach to learning technologies. The first issue I think you need to attend to is how accessible that specific technology is to your students. And by students, I mean all your students who may be accessing your materials, your resources, your lectures through a number of devices now. And so that becomes a criterion that I'll talk about in a rubric that's been developed to help people make those kinds of decisions. So, you know, you have to ask the question, is anybody going to be lost from the start? Is everybody able to access and use the technology equitably? And that may mean trying to do a survey before the course starts, or at least in the first session with students. It's got to all be on the same starting line. Mm-hmm. If there's a document that I think specifically helps to look at how viable technology is, I would recommend ANSTE and Watson's A Rubric for Evaluating E-Learning Tools, which is included in the book. Yeah. But it first appeared in the EDUCAUSE review. And it specifically identifies standards and criteria such as what they call functionality. Can this be used to be scaled up for large classes? How easy is it to use? Is it accessible? What are the technical requirements? Is it accessible by mobile devices? Does it allow for social presence of the teacher and the learners? Does it provide tools to engage students in cognitive tasks and to enable them to self-reflect? So there's a whole range of questions there, but they're pretty much student-centered there.
That's excellent.
Just one other thing to add there is that it's really important to ask questions about the science that underlies the development of the technology. Not only how is it developed, how is it designed, but who were the people with whom it was tested on, and does that population reflect my population of students? And there's a wonderful tool, just to help people here, available at www.michigan.gov, entitled Tools and Guidance for Evaluating Bias in Instructional Materials, which is an important learner-centered consideration in our ability to equitably advance all students towards achieving our outcomes.
I don't think we've ever had a guest with as much information at her fingertips as Peggy Mackey.
It's just so fun to learn.
Well, I just am thinking, you know, Peggy, if you were getting ready to teach a course right now and were perhaps involved formally or informally in the development and design of that course, if it were me and I knew of that many resources, I can't imagine how long it would take me to make the course because I would be going on these rabbit trails, making sure that every single word fit every single rubric, or it would just be so much, but you just navigate it with ease.
But, you know, in particular, because most people, besides Zoom, were using the LMS, there's a lot built into the LMS in the design of a course that helps you think through some of these things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, for example, you can turn on the assistive learning button, I guess I'll call it, and that will do a check for you to make sure that the content and the means of presentation satisfy what we now know all learners need to have access to. So I think things will become integrated much better as we go along. And all of these considerations are now emerging because I think nationally we have such a strong responsibility to make sure we're preparing all of our students to become successful in higher education.
So as you think about students, there's been a lot written over the years that kind of tries to assess the technological skills of our students. And I think the safest thing we could say is they're all across the range. There are some that are highly skilled, others that are totally lost in that world. But the other thing we know is that employers are becoming increasingly interested in having college graduates that they hire have technological skills. So how might we better prepare our students for what will be their lives in a digital world as employees over the next 50 years?
Yeah, great question. I'm going to answer that first with something I experienced that answers that, but it happened in the hospital yesterday, and I periodically have to take my husband for a very special blood test once a week, and there's a very special nurse who takes the test and has the technology diagnose it, and her room is always filled with patients, so there's a lot of pressure on her to perform. But what she said to us when we went into the room is, I'm learning now as I'm taking your blood how to use a whole system to do the analysis of your blood work. And she had someone with her who had also learned it, so that was happening. But think about that, that work and learning are now connected.
Absolutely.
So learning on the job, so to speak, is expected. So I think we have to prepare students for understanding that that might be an environment that they will be exposed to. And someone may not say to them, you have to learn this. You have to take the initiative yourself to realize that this new product, let's say I need to talk about, or this new process is one I have to learn about. What are the resources available for me online to learn about that? So that's, I think, one big difference in the more traditional work situation we've seen. I do think that students need to be prepared to communicate using technology to draw on different ways people will understand. Because we live in a global society now, people learn different way, absorb material differently. So learning how to use audio, picture, video, interactive materials, I think, are very successful. That there's a flexibility in how we know how to use technology will be important to address the learning needs of customers, potential customers, patients, all of those kinds of things. Very important to learn to effectively collaborate online and in real time. So as many of us use Google Docs, for example, and to include the voices of those who are in that particular project. I also think, and this is a tougher one, but I've actually heard from my son's friends who've recently gone through interviews that they've been asked to perform tasks right in front of the interviewers.
Really?
And what the interviewers, what they will do is they will, in the midst of some situation they've engaged the student in, will then say, well, what if this happens? What would you do? What if that happens? What would you do?
Amazing.
So having students practice the adaptability to address changing situations or problems, I think, is a very important ability. Designing new solutions to a problem, And this may sound a little strange to say, but actually online gaming is an interesting way to enable students to develop that flexibility, because you don't always know what the next player is or the next move is going to be, but you have to make your next move. So I think online case studies, gaming, immersion in virtual simulations that have also built in changing aspects of that environment are important to develop that capability in students. I also think they need to learn the most relevant applications and tools in their field. And even when they do, they should be prepared to learn more about what's been developed in them once they land the job. Flexibility, I think, is very important.
Unfortunately, I think one of the subtle messages that we send to students is come to college, learn what you need to learn, get your diploma, and then you can start working. And we don't often communicate to them, and oh, by the way, you're going to need to be a lifelong learner. So just because you have that diploma, that doesn't mean that you can't learn new skills, prepare for new careers, or whatever that might be.
That's exactly it. The ability to take agency for becoming a lifelong learning is certainly one that we need to develop in our students, that we are always or should always be able to improve our knowledge, our skills, learn about development, and know where our weaknesses lie.
Absolutely.
Every one of us has some sort of weakness, but you can't just say, well, I'm not good at that, I'm not going to do it. You got to keep moving. So you need to move where the technologies move, where the problems move, where the issues are. Mm.
And I think it starts with us modeling that kind of growth mindset and flexibility when things about online teaching or even traditional face-to-face on-site teaching keep changing, and our response to change. What's our response like?
I think that's perhaps one of the most important challenges right now in teaching is our ability to become adaptive, flexible teachers who recognize that we may need additional resources, materials, or different pedagogical approaches to enable all of our students to learn. One size is not going to work for everybody. So you're correct in what you just said, for sure.
And what a wonderful gift it is to give to our students to say, hey, I don't know how to do that. Can you show me how to do that thing? And let the student become the teacher.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's recently, just to embellish on that, a wonderful research article that came out of Harvard comparing how students feel about their learning. It's important to say feel, about where they learn the most. And their initial response is they learn the most from lecturing. But
really?
The researchers were interested in finding out if engaging students more in the content of a course, providing them rapid feedback, could make a difference. And what they were able to show by using the same assessments of their learning is that it's actually the students who are engaged in their learning, you know, who could demonstrate the learning, outperformed the students who said, I feel like. So the conclusion the researchers come to is that students are actually influenced by the fluency of the instructor.
Wow, I'm just thinking what kind of implications that the language differences and the research have on like end of course surveys and the types of questions we ask students when we're asking them to evaluate their learning. You know, are we asking them what learning elements did you feel that you learned the most, or are we assessing their learning in a more direct style, or just so many things to think about.
Right. And, you know, what's going to, we might talk about this at some point. What's really helpful now is our access to evidence of student learning that can help us answer those kinds of questions.
Yes.
If we only took the time to look at that evidence.
Right. And what's been important with the on-time evidence we receive now is we can answer those questions much better than we used to, because the algorithms are mining the data and reporting to it
Absolutely.
Right on time.
I have to admit, I'm sitting here thinking about a new business venture. I'm going to have a phone line called 1-800-PEGGY-MACKEY people can call in, pay a fee, ask you a question, and you'll give them 5 research sources. What do you think?
Well, you know, I have always tried to ground my work in research because there's really something to hang on to there.
Absolutely.
And when I read the 2018 How Humans Learn Too, that actually just got me so excited about the developments that are happening now in technology, because they enable us to actually realize what we now know about learning and the difficulties it is to find out the troubles students have. So, for example, the research shows that students are highly individualized in how they learn, and they are a product of their systems, their cultural systems, their developmental systems, their social systems, and they then often cover what they believe or think in subjective perspectives. Counter that with the fact that the actual process of learning is very complex. And how can we get into it? Well, we can get into it now through the learning analytics that is now built into technology that identifies patterns of strength and underperformance. But we didn't have the time to do that before. So now we're on the front line of students learning in an amazing way.
That's wonderful.
Speaking of exciting things, what are some of the technologies that you are most excited about?
Hard to say one in particular. Of course, because I'm so focused in my work on assessing student learning on the capabilities of what are called learning analytics and adaptive learning systems that generate data about student learning on time, so that we can in real time deal with those issues with the student rather than waiting till when I see you next week, when the students have moved on to other things and I might be worried about what I'm going to talk about the next week. This capability to be able to learn about performance and underperformance patterns in real time is, I think, just an amazing development. That's certainly one that really gets me excited. I'm very interested in developments in artificial intelligence, which is now the most sophisticated use of technology that we have. And you see that in AI assistants, for example, on campuses that are sources of information for students, you know, similar to Siri. But the projections are that there may be AI tutors that travel with students, so to speak, and help them, offer them tutoring lessons. I mean, this is down the road. But the fact that AI enables systems to mimic human-like behaviors is absolutely fascinating. So fascinating that at Georgia Tech, faculty member employed a robot as one of his teaching assistants, and the students were unable to detect that Jill Watson, the name, and that's the name of the driving technology, they could not tell separate her from the humans.
That's incredible.
Wow.
That is amazing. I saw it this morning on the news, a figure in a white costume dancing. It didn't have the sound on. I wouldn't have known that it was actually a robot that Elon Musk just released.
Oh, my goodness.
The human movements were so amazing. It was hard to tell. It was crazy.
Absolutely.
That's where we're headed.
The fact that the technology, the AI technology, is so designed that the system can use what it learns, fascinating.
At what level do you find colleges and universities taking advantage of this AI technology?
Yeah, I actually have to defer to EDUCAUSE on this one, because EDUCAUSE does annually a projection of where we are with the use of particular technologies. And they were pretty much on the money when they said that learning analytics would be fairly visible by the year 2021-22. That's on the money. They don't speculate that artificial intelligence will necessarily be right now, but I would say over the next 5 years, probably we'll see more of it. Basically, on most campuses, it is in the AI robot. There certainly are programs, for example, that score student work using rubrics, which is fascinating, right? Instead of humans doing, the program can do it. Most people will say, even the ones who've developed those programs, that you as a faculty member need to try this out with your students to make sure that it represents what you would be doing. But the argument that they make is that the software is more reliable in scoring the work and less biased than actually humans.
I would think that piece of technology would make faculty smile.
Well, it should. It should in terms of providing you more time to deal then with the issues that the technology reveals.
Absolutely.
So I see all of these things as resources that enable us to do, you know, more targeted things with our students.
Absolutely. Well, Peggy, it's been a thrill to have you with us today. For those of you who are listening, we're going to get some of these resources from Peggy, include them on the Digital to Learn website. So as you listen to this podcast and you say, hey, I'd like to look at that publication, or that's a great resource, it will be listed on our website. And we thank Peggy for sharing her expertise with us today and just being a delightful guest. So thank you, Peggy.
Oh, happy to have been with you.
And best wishes on getting to and from the island.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University. Embrace the future.
Always keep learning.